Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Lit Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Thea. Today, we'll be speaking with Neil Francis about how to boost and ignite your creativity and his latest book, The Creative Thinking Book. Neil Francis is an entrepreneur with extensive experience in digital and software technology. He is the author of four other self-development books, including Positive Thinking, published by Lit. Through a mixture of anecdotes, stories, and practical methods, the Creative Thinking Book is designed to help you understand what creativity is and how to unleash and apply your inner creativity. Thank you very much, Neil, for joining us today on Lit Radio Podcast. I'm very excited to speak with you about your new book, The Creative Thinking Book. Before we start talking about the book, could you tell us a little bit background story about yourself?
Hi, well, that's great. It was great to be here. So as you can hear, I'm actually English, but I've lived in Scotland for about 35 years here. I went to college in the early 80s there, and I got into sales and marketing in various companies in Edinburgh. And then I went to work for a marketing and design agency in the 90s. And then the internet explosion happened around about 95, 96. And I wanted to set up my own business that was going to build websites. And I co-founded a company called CompanyNet. I'm not a tech, but I employed hundreds of people over the years in building websites. And we were just dead lucky. We hit the wave at the right time, worked with some great brands and companies and organizations like Disney and Coke. We worked across America, South Africa. We sold the business to our biggest client in the late 90s. And then we were able to do an MBO in the early 90s, MBO to buy it back in the early 2000s. And I thought this was going to be my life. We might sell it again. But then in 2006, I came back from a conference in America. I was developing a clot in my calf, and we went on holiday in Arran about 4 months later, and a bit broke off and it went to my brain, and I had a serious stroke, which means I couldn't communicate for about 2-3 years. And so in one of the books I talk about that, one of my books, I talk about the whole process of that recovery to where I got to where I'm today. So I still have some cognitive issues with words and so forth too. When we do this interview, you might, I might get some words mixed up a few times, or I might struggle for words to grab. So just accept I'm not drunk. It's just still kind of what happened to the stroke in 2006. And today I've written now 5 books, 4 with Lid, and I'm also a director of Pogo Studio, which I run with my son, Jack. We build apps, websites, and we have 2 digital health products that are currently being rolled out in the NHS. And finally, I am a trustee of Chest, Heart and Stroke Scotland, and I sit on their board. So that's me.
Thank you very much for sharing that, Neil. And then my question now is, why did you decide to write the Creative Thinking Book?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because if you Google kind of creative books, there are loads, you know, and there's some very famous ones, some great ones, actually. But most of them seem to point towards how to become creative, more creative, maybe the processes of brainstorming and all this sort of stuff. And what I was keen to explore was, first of all, to put the argument that everybody is creative. But the great majority of us don't fulfill our creative feature. And there's a number of reasons why that happens. And I call them the inhibitors. And in the book, I talk about those main 8 inhibitors in the book. So I wanted to write a book that would try and put the argument that, yes, everyone's creative. And I talk about that in the 3 chapters, where it's in your DNA, it's in your soul, and it's in your nature. But then I talk about these inhibitors, and then I try and give some solutions about how we can get around these inhibitors. So I thought it was just a different approach to writing a book about creativity.
Mm. Yeah, there is a quote from the book that I want to read now. Everyone is creative, but there is a rub. Most people fail to achieve their creative potential. So, yeah, you're saying the reason for that is those eight inhibitors that you're discussing in the book, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. But the kind of the core, I think that for whatever reason, and we go into it in the book, we've been told that we aren't creative as a species, or the majority of people aren't. And again, in the book, I give lots of evidence about studies and I think we might talk about those later on about people that believe they could be more creative, but they've been held back for a number of reasons. And I think one of the key things is it's about this myth that everyone's been told that the brain, which is true, is kind of split into two parts. You have the right side of the brain, which is where creativity, imagination, intuition, all these things sit. These are where you get the sparks of ideas. This is where you might read something and think, wow, I've got a great idea to do this. You might be trying to solve a business problem and something just pops in your head. That's your right side of your brain. But most people have been told that they're mainly on the left side of the brain. Now, the left side of the brain is more about planning and logic and rationale. And therefore, the argument goes that left brain people are more logical in their thinking rather than imaginative and simply cannot be creative. And that's at the reef. But it's rubbish. It's rubbish because to be really creative, to really solve some of the big problems and issues that we all face in our business, yes, it starts on the right side of business. So you might have an idea that's going to solve this particular problem in your business or in your family or as an entrepreneur. But the only way you're going to make it happen is if you then start to use the left side of the brain, where you start to plan and think, right, how am I going to do this? How are we going to achieve this? And those two things together is a creative process. And to me, that is a myth that needs to be completely changed now, that the creativity is a one whole brain process, as opposed to it starts at one side and then it stops there. So the creativity bit, the spark starts on the left bit, but an idea will only happen when things start to happen from really from innovation and doing proper planning and do all these sort of areas.
That's fascinating. And then you already touched a little bit on that, but on the back cover of your book, the first sentence that you see is, "It is in your DNA, nature, and soul." So it's really creativity in anyone's DNA, soul, and nature.
Absolutely. I mean, if you just think in the history of the human race, we have created and done art from we could walk. If in the book I talk about painting, rock paintings that go thousands and thousands of years in the making, there are reasons why our ancestors passed on stories, how to do things, paintings, because it was teaching us how to be better and to advance quicker. And if you think about it, there is one human experience that seems not to have any parallels out in art, and it's the arts. Indeed, only a few animal species exhibit even the faintest hint of creativity, artistry. There is a Indian artist called Cera, whose drawings are abstract and also representation of landscapes, have sold hundreds of millions of pounds, sorry, tens of thousands. And she's incredibly famous, but she's an elephant. She's a 50-year-old Asian elephant. And it's the same. You could look at some chimpanzees and gorillas have been taught to draw and paint. But the key is here, they've been taught to do it. Basically, they're forced to do it. These animals do not decide to go for a walk and actually, I'm going to paint something. Humans are the only people that do that. And that's because I absolutely believe it's in our DNA that we were, there's a DNA that helped us survive by giving so creative solutions to all the threats and the opportunities we were given.
Yeah, I love that story with the elephant. It really shows how we are different as humans. And then you make a very interesting claim in the book that creativity plays a huge role in our economic expansion and the development of societies. So what's that role?
Yeah, it's had a massive, it's where we are, why we are today, that we can create a vaccine that once upon a time would have taken 10 years, can now take 1 year, and that's a COVID vaccine. But if you look back in the history of the human kind, that we've always, from an economic point of view, tried to improve the things that have gone before us. And a really good example of that I used within the book is I asked the question, who invented the printing press? Now, I thought from my school days, it would be Gutenberg, the German inventor. That's complete rubbish. Nobody really knows when it was invented because we have been using printing for thousands of years that go back to the Chinese and the Far East. But what's happened over the period of the printing press is that with creativity and innovation, we start to make things better. So we start off with very simple printing, and then we get to Gutenberg. And then from Gutenberg, it moves on to about 600 years, where in 1968, a brilliant woman called Evelyn Berezin designed the first word processor. And that would allow what in those days, unfortunately, secretaries that they would allow users to edit, delete, cut, and paste text, and you'd print it out by an MBM, sorry, IBM computer. And now, today, when I wrote this book, I am sitting here when I write this book on my Apple Mac, and I'm wirelessly printing off the pages from my HP smart printing app. And it's through innovations like this over thousands of years that humans have made incredible progress over in agriculture, science, medicine, the arts, technology, and business. And that is why we can put the man on the moon, or we can solve help with COVID, or we can design new cars and new machines that will keep people alive. That's all because we're creative souls.
Yeah, what has been achieved through creativity, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then let's move to the ACE inhibitors in the book. And first, I would like to discuss the education. So, do you think that our education system is helping us boost our creativity, or is it doing exactly the opposite?
Well, that's kind of a crucial question, isn't it? And gets to the core of one of the big barriers, I think. I think our education system does hold us back from creativity at a certain stage. I've got three kids, one's 28 now, one's 25, and one's 20. But when they were really young and they're going to nursery or primary school, they were just so creative people. They would do imaginative games, they would write things, they'd paint, they do wonderful creative things. And then something happens, and it tends to be when we go to, in Scotland, what we call high school, and obviously down in England, I think it's called secondary school. And something happens because the education system starts to say actually creativity is not that important. What's important is what will get you a job, or what we think will get you a job. And if you can look at any education system across the world, they're really structured the same. You have at the top, you have maths, science, and languages. Then you get the humanities, and then you get the arts. And what's bizarre about the arts is a hierarchy in that as well. So you have the visual arts and music at the top, and drama and dance at the bottom. And the reason I got quite passionate about this is I watched a brilliant TED talk, which was actually recorded in 2006 by a guy called Sir Kenneth Robinson, sorry. He's an international advisor on education, and it's one of the most viewed TED talks ever, 68 million. And basically, he makes that point. He says that education systems, wherever they are, have this hierarchy: maths, science, languages at the top, humanities in the middle, and then visual arts, music, dance, and drama at the bottom. And what that means is that your ability to think creatively from a creative point of view, to learn how to be creative, is really limited by the time you get to high school. Now, don't blame the teachers. The teachers are brilliant. You know, they're absolutely brilliant. And it's the most important job, I think, in the world. So it's nothing to do with the education, sorry, with teachers. It's to do with the system. And I'll just make a very interesting point. If you think, Tina, sorry, Tia, if you think back when you were at school, I think school, the one teachers I remember are those that were quite creative, that we kind of push the boundaries a wee bit about to make you think a bit across the outside the box. But in the main, they're restricted because you've got to stick to these stupid timetables to get people through really exams. So that's kind of the key thing. And for me, what you kind of think about this is, right, no one's going to change the education system today, certainly not in the UK and across the world. So what are we going to do about all of this? Well, let's just have a look at one of the major obstacles that's probably blocked your creative potential: the exam. If you think about the exam, basically that you have a list of questions where, in the main, there's only one answer. Okay, that's what the person that has set the exam for. They want particular one answer, And throughout your school, you're taught the techniques of getting the right answer, Give the wrong answer means you fail that question. Give enough wrong answers and you fail the exam. Therefore, we're taught that failure is a bad thing, And also, if you're going to be successful in the exams, you got to really, again, stick to the routine of setting a timetable. You're going to revise at this time on this day, and on and on and on. The problem about all of this, the exam, the failure and structure, is that creativity doesn't work like this at all. You see, creativity requires answers to questions that no one knows the answer to yet. That's what is a brilliant thing. That is, you're trying to find answers to things that we've not really seen yet or heard of or witnessed. And it's that point where the creativity bit kicks in, where the innovation starts. Secondly, in many instances, there are a number of solutions to a problem you're facing, not just one answer. So again, the complete opposite of what an exam is doing. It's looking for one particular answer, whereas what creativity will teach you that there's a number of solutions, and you've got to work out which is the best one for you in that instance. Thirdly, creativity really doesn't like structure, and therefore, if you're going to sit down and plan a creative calendar of when you're going to be creative, it just won't work. And whereas, as I said earlier, with exams, you have to do that. And therefore, you're taught that structure and timetables are really good. But for creativity to work, you need that freedom because it might happen anywhere. It might happen when you're out walking, when you're lying in bed. Whatever it is, it will appear. And the best thing you can do is to carry a notebook with you, by the way, when that moment happens. But that's a different discussion. But I think from the timetable thing, I think you're just told at school, this is how you have to do it, but it just won't work for creativity. Lastly, and crucially, creativity loves failure. Okay? It's from failure that you become more creative. As you are banging your head trying to get a solution, where you are just so frustrated because you just can't get this answer, you then might decide this is the answer to the solution, but actually, when you look at it in detail, it doesn't work. So it's failure. That is where creativity is at its best. It's teaching you the right ways to cope with failure, but more importantly, how you use that to be successful in your creative endeavors. And so I love failure. I've learned so much from it over the years. And it just, every time you go back to something that you failed, funny enough, at some point, your brain will find the creative spark to help you with any sort of solution you're looking for. So, as I said, you can't change your education system. And I'd also say, obviously, some great things came out of my education system. And we're very fortunate that we've got an education system within the UK. And there's some brilliant things that come out of it. And there's brilliant teachers, as I said. But if you want to be more creative, you just need to kind of accept that you were boxed in when you were at school, and that probably stopped some of your your creative potential from really happening. But once you accept that and you start to realize that, then I think hopefully some of the ideas I have in the book will help you to accept your educations that you went through, and the book will show you how to be more creative.
I really liked what you said, creativity needs failure, because you're right. At school we were all taught that we need to avoid failure at all costs. And then yeah, that doesn't boost our creativity at all. So I really loved that quote from you. And then so moving on from education, the next inhibitor is work. So what about it? Does it kill creativity?
Yeah, it's really fun, and it's really, really pop topical subject at the moment, because obviously the economy is absolutely in a terrible situation. And in a way, this is where creativity and work can be really good partners. And what I mean by that, if I've been involved with businesses for like 20, 30 years. And I can look back over the last 25 years. There have been three real big incidents that threatened the businesses I was involved with when I was a chief executive of a internet development company. And those other companies that were based in Scotland and in the UK. The first of these threats came in 2000 when my business, I ran at the time as chief executive of a web development company, that all the projects that we were working on, there was real worry that the computers would not work after the at 12 p.m. in 2000, with this issue around what was called the Millennium Bug. And everyone felt that none of the computers would work because of how they were programmed back in the 60s and 70s. And the fear was that these computers didn't understand they were now in a new millennium, and the programs just would not work. And the big worry was like planes would drop out the play out the sky, nuclear stations would stop working, and it was a huge issue. And so millions and millions and millions of pounds were invested trying to get the right solutions to make that happen. Fortunately, it didn't happen. The second big threat was in 2008, when we had the financial crash. And I can absolutely remember this. You know, we banked with the Royal Bank of Scotland at the time. And when it looked like the Royal Bank of Scotland was going to crash within 24 hours, I remember sitting with my finance director saying, we might not have to pay tomorrow because we won't have any systems to pay anybody. And that, again, we had to think really carefully about if that did happen, what we were going to do. And we had plans to do it. And the last one that's really threatened, and probably the biggest, is COVID. You know, over the last two years, you know, at least over 150,000 people have died, and it has given havoc around so many families and friends, families around the world. And for businesses, this was a huge, huge problem when it started, you know, because we couldn't go back to the office. Could we trade? Could we do anything? And what basically happened, unfortunately, a lot of businesses did go down the pan, unfortunately. But others thought, right, we've got to think differently of how we're going to do business. And today, we're doing this over Teams. I never, ever hardly go for meetings now in Edinburgh. I do all my meetings in my office in my garden. And what I'm trying to prove here is when businesses are threatened, it is when creativity really kicks in a business and solutions really happen. The big problem is when those threats are gone, the businesses go back to normality, where normal risks are really not encouraged. And so the business will just go back to normal functioning. But that's great, you know, and I'm sure lots of people listening to this would identify where threats have happened to their businesses that they've come up with creative solutions. And what's even more fascinating, if you talk to CEOs, they will tell you that the most important talent that they need within their businesses is creativity and innovation. And there was a report done in 2016 by PricewaterhouseCoopers, who interviewed 4,446 chief executives in 89 countries. And that's what they said. They said, creativity is the number one thing that we need, but they can't find them in their companies. So how do you square that circle again? And the problem is, I think it's to do with the chief executives need it, but when it gets down to the middle management, and maybe some more senior levels as well, creativity is undermined every day in work environments. And that is because companies, the main thing is at those levels is to maximize profit, to reduce costs and facilitate coordination, teamwork, productivity and control. And creativity doesn't really sit in that. And that's a big problem. So the top people want it to happen, but the middle managers, just not their fault really, have just been kind of said subjectively, creativity is not important. Risk, we mustn't take risk. And risk and creativity go hand in hand.
Absolutely. And then I would like to move to one of the other inhibitors, which is concrete. So you are saying in the book that we're all surrounded by big tall buildings all of the time, and we are so far away from nature. And you say that if we spend more time in nature, you say that's going to build to boost our creativity. So how can nature help?
Yeah, I mean, this all came from the first lockdown stopped in Edinburgh. I live just outside of Edinburgh. I went to Edinburgh. And The place was empty. I hadn't been there for about a year, and I kind of noticed the amount of new buildings that were being built, new housing estates being built that had just, you know, wasn't there 5 years ago. And I think this is great because we need to encourage people to come to our cities, to stay in hotels. It's fantastic for the economic future of a city. And equally, we need houses. So I'm not saying these should not happen. But the problem is, what we also need is to have the space that allows us, whether it's in these cities or in our towns, that you can experience nature. So it might be the park, it might be a river, it might be just some woods nearby. But we've got to have that, because there was a really interesting article on the BBC News by the environmental reporter Mark Kenever. And he basically said, and the headline was, millions lack access to parks and green places. And it cited a growing body of research that linking access to natural open spaces to being health and well-being. And if you don't have that, from a well-being point of view, all the evidence is, and I talk about it in lots of studies that I reference in the book, that you're more likely to suffer anxiety and stress if you can't get to nature. Now, why is that important for creativity? Well, creativity needs the brain to be relaxed. It needs to be in an area where, yes, you might get motivated or passionate, but that will only come when your mind is at a settled place. And if you don't get that, then it's going to really struggle. You really struggle to be creative. To be creative. Yeah, so basically, one of the things I say is that if you really want to really boost your creativity, then lunchtime, weekends, whatever, go for a walk. You're in nature. I said, if it's a city, then go to the park. If you're fortunate to be close to a railway station or getting a bus, then go to outside the city and just go for a walk and just experience nature, because that will help hugely with your creative juices and help you to be more creative.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you mentioned that a little bit earlier, that you now don't need to go to Edinburgh for your meetings. They're all now happening online. But then we're constantly surrounded by different tech to do our jobs, and then also for entertainment once we're finished with the work for the day. But is that dangerous for our creativity as well, to be always surrounded by tech?
Yes and no. I mean, a lot of my, this is my fifth book, and they all start with a story. Each chapter starts with a story. And a lot of that I will get from the internet. So whether it's a TED talk or I read an article in a website, and that sparks an idea for a chapter of my book. So it's fantastic. But you can get overkill. And I'll just give you the example, which I talk about in the book. I and my wife were off to go and stay in Skye up in Scotland last year. And I've been really busy at work. It would be really stressful and so forth. And as normal, I was going to take my laptop and I was going to obviously have my phone on and all that sort of stuff. And then I don't know how I'd found it, but kind of unintentionally, I found this kind of thing on my iPhone that showed me how long I'd been on my phone each day. And I was absolutely shocked. It basically said the average for the month of April was 4 hours and 32 minutes per day. That's how long I've been on my phone. Now, if you times that by 365 days, that's basically saying 66 days of my year I'm on my mobile phone. And it had a huge shock on me. Now, That's not me on LinkedIn or Facebook all the time because I use my phone for business, obviously. But still, it's a huge amount of time I'm on my phone. I made then one of the best decisions I ever made, as I said, when I got into the car to go to Sky, I switched off my phone and I never switched back on again until we got back. And I only checked emails every few days on my laptop. And do you know something? I had the most relaxing time I've ever had on a holiday. And what I kind of realized that yes, we need to be on all the time in business. We need to be on. We need clients to contact us. We've got emails to send and so forth. And as I said earlier, it really helps with the creative process if you get really inspired things from the internet that could really help with the creativity. But funny enough, you've got to switch off as well, and you've got to have space where you're not on, you're off, and you need to be off, for quite a long time of the day if you're going to get the right time to think and process creative thoughts. Because again, that's how creative works. You just need kind of the silence around you to really think about solutions to problems you've got or ideas. And being on tech all the time, you just can't do that. And therefore, again, in the book, I talk about ways to help you do that, to help you get that space that gives you the time to breathe from a creative point of view. And then when you've got your solution, when you've had your creative thoughts, yeah, get back online, because that's when the creativity will then come into the innovation. And that's when things will start to happen, because you'll then start to send off your emails, you'll write your documents, you might do your new book, whatever. But that's why switching off is so crucial, because that's the start of the creative process. Silence and space to think.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, what you're saying, we don't need to be off all of the time. Tech is not going to kill our creativity, but we should probably detox at times.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. And then the last inhibitor that I would like to talk about with you today is stuff. So you say in the book, that was very interesting to me when I was reading that, the more stuff we possess, the less creative we are. So why is that?
Yeah, well, it's again, I reference a lot of stuff in that chapter, based on a lot of evidence. So I'll just try and keep it simple. I don't know why this is, but over the last 10 years, I've been fascinated with a report called the World Happiness Report, that basically it studies 149 countries around the world, and it ranks them, the cities and the countries, to find the most happiest place to live in the world. And there are kind of six variables that to measure this, that this report uses. And it's based around your quality of life and the resulting level of happiness that comes from that. And these include the GDP per capita of that country, yeah, social support, healthy life expectancy, freedom, generosity, and absence of corruption. And if you want to know where to move to be the most happiest place, it's Finland. Finland is the third time running to be the happiest place to live. If you've always dreamed of going to Denmark, they finish second. Or if you're into skiing and fondue, then go to Switzerland, because that's third. Unfortunately, and it's probably understandable, Afghanistan is the least happiest in the world in 2022. What's really fascinating about all that, they never use wealth as a measure for, I mean, individual net wealth for happiness. It's not there. So they're saying that happiness is not related to potentially how much money you have or how many material stuff that you have. What's fascinating, I then found another report. There was a report in 2013 done by Ipsos, the research, the global research firm, which it tried to find out the top countries in the world where the importance of having material things related to how successful one feels. And so again, they had lots of questions they tried to get the answer. And do you know what the three countries are that relate directly materials with success? Is China, India, and Brazil. But if you take them and look at them in the happiness report, Brazil is 32, India is 144th, and China is 94. So to me, that says happiness is not related at all to materialism. Now, what's this important to creativity? What's important is if you spend most of your time looking at that new car, or you're looking at that holiday you want to go on, or that new watch, and you're on Amazon loads, you're just focusing on that. There is no space for creativity at that point, none. Because you're just focusing on one thing. And there's actually a proper psychological term for this. It's called the focusing illusion, where you put so much effort in one particular thing that's completely out of proportion to what is going out, that's involved in the rest of your world at the time. And again, in the book, I talk about that, the importance of really understanding how material goods and how wanting more material things is just really bad for the creative process. And again, I give solutions to maybe look at that and to help you with that process.
Yeah, and they're very useful. I can definitely confirm. And then my very last question to you is, what would be your most important tips for people to ignite and boost their creativity?
So the biggest tip I would say is it starts and ends with you, the creative process. Let me ask you, which I do in the book, to say what links these four brilliant achievements, which seem very unrelated. So you have something called the first thing called Neptune Staircase, which is a amazing feat of engineering that is a quarter mile chain of eight locks, and it can raise a commercial shipping canal by 19 meters. Okay, and that was built in 1803 till 1822. The second is a camera, which the invention of that was by George Eastman in 1884. The third one is the life raft, and again that was invented by a lady, Maria Bisley, who invented a new way that would help people stop dying at sea in 1892, and the last one was the ice cream maker, who was invented by Nancy Johnson in 1846. And what's the connection between those four things? And you know what it is? All of them started in the imagination of those four people. They would have had an idea, a spark of an idea, whereby they thought, actually, if I want to create this thing called ice cream, I've got to keep it cold. And so Nancy came up with an idea of doing that, but that would have started in her brain, in the imagination. And that's where all creativity starts. It starts in your imagination, in my imagination. And I would say that the biggest tip is just fire up your imagination, because it's when you get your imagination fired up, that is where you will achieve great creative things. And how do you do that? Basically, get more knowledge. And what we mean by knowledge is, yeah, reading is obvious, whether you turn to books, newspapers, blogs, tweets, websites, Instagrams, LinkedIn, Facebook posts, they'll all increase your knowledge. Yeah, it's from having this knowledge, you will then start creative sparks in your head. And if you're not into doing podcasts or reading books, then watch really interesting documentaries. Go and watch films, listen to podcasts, radio programs, go to art galleries, book festivals, bookshops, wherever it is where you'll get a new experience that will help with your creativity. You know, if you look at and study the lives of some of the world's greatest innovators, entrepreneurs, explorers, engineers, scientists, medics and artists, you will see curiosity is one of the key ingredients that makes them really creative. Alexander Fleming, you know, Rosalind Franklin, Pablo Picasso, Mary Curie, Da Vinci, Tracy Emin, Neil Armstrong, and Florence Nightingale would have been motivated to continuously increase their knowledge. And with these new insights and understanding, they were able to create wonderful art, solve medical challenges, and even walk on the moon. I would then say, really fire up your curiosity, which allows your imagination to be the spark that ignites your creativity, leading you to exciting, innovative, new ideas ready to be put into action. And hopefully, all of this will make you even more passionate about creativity, which will prove infectious to everyone around you. And as I said at the very end of the book, I use from the book a quote from Albert Einstein, who says, creativity is contagious. Pass it on. And I suggest that we all do that.
Amazing. Thank you very much, Neil, for this interesting conversation. I hope it will really boost and ignite our listeners' creativity. But of course, they can read even more in your book, The Creative Thinking Book. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks everyone for listening. Don't forget to keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and at Lit Business Media on LinkedIn for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.